All right, can everybody hear me? I probably could speak loud enough anyway, but. Okay, so hi everyone. Thank you so very much for allowing me to come and talk today. I'm gonna talk about mixed morphology supernova remnants, which I find really interesting objects. And in particular, I'm gonna talk about this cute little object called G346, but as I'm Australian, I'm not gonna pronounce everything because we like to shorten words. But before we get started into the analysis of what we find for this object, I'll give you background. You've seen this plot before many times. I guess we could make a count for this and make it a fun game to have. But everybody knows that, you know, supernova remnants are thought to be the origin of cosmic rays below the knee. And their origin of their connection with cosmic rays arises from energetic arguments. If you try to get the cosmic ray energy density, if you only assume 1 to 10% of the explosion energy goes into accelerating particles, you're actually able to naturally explain the energy density that we derive here. And in addition, the spectral index that we get below the knee is about approximately 2, which is consistent with the spectral index derived from diffusive shock acceleration, which is thought to be one of the main mechanisms accelerating particles in supernova remnants. So as the shock front of a supernova remnant propagates, particles within the vicinity of the shock will scatter back and forth off turbulence that has formed on either side. And the particles will continue crossing this until they get large enough energy that they can actually escape the acceleration region and propagate out. And so it was actually determined in the 1980s that shell-type supernova remnants can actually accelerate particles up to 10 or 100 TeV. And since the advent of high-resolution X-ray satellites such as Chandra, we've actually been able to confirm this. And it's not like you haven't seen this plot before, right? Luckily, this is the main example of particles being accelerated up to these higher energies of SN1006 seen here with Chandra, where what we actually detect from this is actually X-ray synchrotron emission arising from multi-TeV electrons. So, yay, supernova remnants can accelerate particles. But one issue with this model, or not an issue, but one thing that this model assumes is that the supernova remnant that goes into this model is a shell-type remnant and is expanding into a kind of an ideal environment, no dense material. However, we know that the massive stars that produce these beautiful objects here tend to be born in very dense environments, and so they won't. And massive stars don't tend to travel too far away from their original birth site. So we actually expect that these massive stars that produce these will actually die in the same dense environment we were born. And this will actually have a profound effect on the environment, on the properties and morphology of the supernova remnants, making them quite interesting. And the best way to be able to work this out or to know how that this dense molecular environment affects the properties is by comparing it to the 80% of known galactic supernova remnants, which are classified as shell type, where the radio and X-ray emission is spatially correlated with each other. However, for mixed morphology supernova remnants, as typified by W49b, what you actually find is that you get a radio shell, but inside you get X-ray emission. It's centrally peaked X-ray emission instead. And so you're probably going, oh, it must be one of those beautiful pulsar wind nebulas we looked at that a number of people spoke about yesterday. But it's actually thermal emission arising from a vent. But apart from it looking at morphological differences between shell type and mixed morphology, you can actually abundance differences. And so in older shell type remnants, when you actually measure their X-ray spectrum, you usually expect to find solar abundances of elements when you measure. But however, with these mixed morphology supernova remnants, you actually find that you get a very strong emission lines from different elements, indicating that, which when you model it, tells you that you actually get supersolar abundances of all these different elements. And this is a really great example. Look how strong those lines are. And this is kind of unexpected. You don't expect to see such strong emission lines in these objects. These objects are classified as middle-aged or quite old, and you would only expect to see these lines in very young ejector-dominated supernova remnants. So again, they kind of go against what we would expect. But apart from their morphological or elemental things, the plasma of a significant number of mixed morphology supernova remnants, again, are weird, right? They seem to actually show that there is rapid electron cooling occurring within the X-ray plasma. So in shell-type remnants, what you actually expect is that the electron temperature will always be higher than the temperature of the ions in the plasma, or at least, or in equilibrium if they're very old. But we find in a lot of mixed morphology remnants that are known to be interacting with molecular clouds that this is not the case. It's the other way around. The temperature of the electrons is much less than the temperature of the ions in the plasma, indicating that there's rapid cooling. And so we actually call this plasma an over-ionized plasma. And so the best way to actually see this effect of this rapid electron cooling on the X-ray emission of these supernova remnants is by looking at a supernova remnant that has this. And so W49B actually shows this. And the authors of this paper actually try to attempt to fit the X-ray spectra of this object using a model that did not include this rapid electron cooling. And you can see that it does a pretty bad job. But once you actually add all these different features that that would come above, that would be produced by this rapid cooling, you're able to reproduce the spectrum reasonably well. And it was measured by, it was also talked briefly by Herman this morning. Another thing, if you swap wavelengths and go into gamma ray emission, again, these objects are actually gamma ray bright. And again, this is actually unexpected. The shock velocities of these supernova remnants are just thought to be way too slow to be able to accelerate particles up to these high energies. But a significant fraction of those detected by the Fermilab satellite are actually mixed morphology supernova remnants, and here is actually an example of a number of them, right? And so it seems that the presence of the molecular cloud actually dramatically affects the properties of these objects. And so these objects are constantly full of surprises, and this is why I'm here, because I get to talk to you about things that we don't expect. But if these supernova remnants can keep defying what we would naively think, and they seem to be gamma-ray bright, and we know that if something can produce gamma-ray emission, well, why not? It should also theoretically be able to produce non-thermal X-ray emission. Why don't we actually look for a mixed morphology supernova remnant that actually shows a non-thermal X-ray emission component? And so this is actually what we did. And so we looked at the relatively understudied mixed morphology remnant G346. And as you can see, it's very typically got the center field X-ray emission shown here with the radio shell. We know that it interacts with molecular clouds based on the detection of a number of OH mesons towards the bottom here. And what we did is that we got a 30 kilosecond XMM observation of the remnant to be able to characterize the plasma properties of the remnant. And so we extracted spectra from a global spectrum as well as from each of these individual regions here, and we modeled the spectrum. And so here is actually the global spectrum we obtained. And we find that to be able to reproduce the spectrum that we have, that we need a non-equilibrium ionization model, which shows that rapid electron cooling that I was referring to as well. But we also, interestingly, require a power law component. And so it's not incredibly obvious on that plot when I showed this, but here I've actually plot the spectra, the same spectra, but now I have removed that power law component and just fit it with a thermal model. And you can see above about 3 to 4 keV, the high energy part of the spectrum fails. The model can't actually reproduce this high energy part of the spectrum. And so what we did is that we thought, okay, well, it could also be like a thermal model or we're missing a model. And so we tried to attempt to fit this spectrum with thermal models and various other things, but it was only with a power law component with a spectral index of about 2.3 that we're actually able to really reproduce the X-ray spectrum, right? So what that tells us is like, well, okay, now we've got this power law component, where does it come from? So this supernova remnant is very close to the galactic plane and is known to be interacting with molecular clouds. So it's not unlikely that this mixed morphology actually arises from a core collapse of a massive star. So naturally, if you see a power law component, one thing you should think of, it could be a pulsar wind nebula that we're missing. And so, in addition, the power law index that we derived of that 2.3 is actually very similar to what the power law index, or the index that you get for pulsars, young pulsars and their nebula. So what we did is that to be able to see if this is the case, we actually searched for a pulsar source, or a source that could possibly be producing this. And so we did a point source analysis of all the point sources within the field of view of our observation, but we looked for a source that was in the radio contours of the remnant, or preferably has no optical infrared counterpart, is predominantly hard in X-rays, and if you calculate the velocity, assuming it produced at the center of the remnant, that it's not unreasonable, like you haven't found like something that's going like 50,000 kilometers or something ridiculous. But unfortunately, none of these sources that we have here are actually able to fulfill this requirement. So we don't seem to be able to find a candidate that could actually be contributing. But as a secondary, I said that this power law component was found through all the supernova remnant, just not localized to one point. And so usually with a pulsar wind nebula, you'd probably expect it to be more in one area, not taking out the whole supernova remnant instead. And so, you know, even though we can't confirm it yet, doesn't seem like it possibly will be a pulsar wind nebula. So then the next thing that one wants to think is, what could the next option be? Well, we all know that particles being accelerated by a shock front can produce non-thermal synchrotron X-ray emission. But usually that they're detected in young shell-type remnants with very fast shock velocities, assuming microgauss magnetic fields. And I said that that mixed morphology remnants are usually just way too slow to be able to accelerate the particles up to these energies if you assume the same magnetic field here. So maybe G346 might just be a unique case that can produce this. And so what I did is actually modeling using a supernova remnant evolution model in a dense environment. I calculated what the shock velocity was, and we find that it's over 1,000 kilometers per second. And so now we need a magnetic field. And so currently the only way that I know of that we can measure the magnetic field from this object is by taking Zeeman splitting measurements here. And so the measurements from that is that we actually get microgauss instead of milligauss, which is actually, or is that the other way around? No, I think I got that correct. Right? This is larger. That's what I wanted to point out. This is much larger than what we see in our shell-type remnants. So it means that the shock front doesn't need to be as fast to be able to accelerate particles up to the energies needed. And we can see that we actually get a maximum energy of 3 TeV that could possibly be producing this. So it's not unreasonable that this power law component could arise from a synchrotron X-ray emission. But I caveat this, right? Because you're probably like, oh, well, maybe. The thing is that we only had a 30 kilosecond XMM observation, which is not a very long observation. And so we've actually got upcoming a new star and a deeper XMM observation of the object to really try to pin this component down and see what we can work out. But, you know, if it happens that this is actually X-ray synchrotron emission, this would actually be quite interesting because it would help us work out how synchrotron emission is actually produced in dense environments from this. But on my last slide, right, because I can feel the questions kind of coming already, is that you've gone, even Stephen pointed out and said, like, you can't use the magnetic field from an OH maser. It doesn't represent the magnetic field within the supernova remnant. And I completely agree, right? Is it valid to assume what we get here is the same here? But at the moment, we don't have anything otherwise, unless that somebody can come and tell me what it is. But hopefully, I applied for a Chandra observation of this object to hopefully to detect non-thermal filaments that could help constrain the magnetic field. But if other people have other ideas on how to really pin this part down, please come and talk to me. I would love to speak. But because 15 minutes is not very long, I didn't say anything about the thermal properties of this supernova remnant plasma. And so one thing we notice is that the temperature we derive is actually just way too low for what we expect for a shock velocity this fast. And so one possibility is that the shock velocity could have broken through a dense material and is now expanding through a low-density medium. And this also might actually explain why we see this over-ionization or rapid electron cooling as well. But we're still currently investigating into this issue. So I think I'm nearly at the end of my time, but hopefully I was able to show that dense environments dramatically affect the properties of the supernova remnants. And this mixed morphology supernova remnant, G346, seems to hint that it could be that a power law component could be coming from X-ray synchrotron, not a pulsar wind nebula. But we've still got a number of things to work out, and hopefully XMM and new star observations will be able to shed light on this interesting component. So watch this space. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Katie. Questions? Oh, several. Excellent.
Excellent. Oh, more questions.
Okay.
People obviously don't want to go to lunch.
How about Gloria first?
Thanks for the really, really lovely talk. When you said the temperature of the electrons is only 0.23 kV, and that's not consistent with 1300, what are you assuming for the equilibration of the shock run for that? Are you assuming that the ions and electrons have equal temperature to begin with?
Yes, to begin with, and then we let it propagate, and it will then settle such that when the modeling occurs, you expect the temperature of the electrons will suddenly drop much lower than the temperature of the ions.
Right, well, it's been demonstrated a lot that that's not the correct assumption, that generally the electrons will start out considerably cooler than the ions at the shock front.
So I even tested that and went the other way around, but it kept going, it kept forcing it to be that the ions were always higher. So yes, I agree with this part.
So it might be a possible explanation for it being so low and not radiative cooling.
Right, of course, of course.
In the back.
I couldn't see very clear how it fits with the radio contours, the non-thermal. I am, because of the colors, they don't match. I cannot see if it is inside the shock front.
So there is a shell. This is not the most optimal image, I agree. But there is a shell of radio emission.
Yes, where is the outer contour of the radio shell? I cannot see from here.
So the X-ray emission from the supernova remnant is fully enclosed within the radio emission of the supernova remnant.
Okay, but it's not superposed with the radio shell.
No. No, it is a mixed morphology supernova remnant, so it does not have anything that is matching up into what you would expect for that.
Okay, and have you searched for any, I don't know, other source that just by chance could produce non-thermal emission in that direction, a chance alignment?
So we haven't done that yet. We're looking into this, but the problem is because it's such a low observation or low exposure, it's a bit hard to work this out. There was a paper, a Suzaku paper, in which they thought it was galactic ridge emission, but they actually showed that that's not what's producing this, and we even tested this as well, trying to fit with what we would expect for a galactic ridge emission, and you can't reproduce the spectrum with that. So we were trying to rule this out, but yeah, this is something that we're hopefully will try to confirm with more observations.
If you increase the magnetic field, so you accelerate faster, but you also cool faster, and that actually compensates for the whole thing.
Okay.
So I don't think you can, by increasing the magnetic field, you don't get to higher photon energies with 1300 kilometers a second.
Okay.
One thing you could think of, what about reverse shock? Because, you know, even if the forward shock can be slow, at some points the reverse shock is actually accelerating with respect to the ejecta.
That's a good idea, yeah.
Another thing, but then you really require probably a very high GeV flux, which may be secondary electrons, although it may be hard to actually get to these energies.
Right, okay, yeah, maybe we should talk about that, because it would be really good to work that out.
Thank you for this very interesting result. I was curious, actually, about the nature of the hard component.
Yep.
Have you been able to rule out a thermal interpretation? Because we do see in other mixed morphology remnants two thermal, with one being hotter.
Yeah, so yes, I did try to fit a thermal component, because you're absolutely correct. But no, you're unable to be able to reproduce. It actually produces a worse fit adding thermal components from this. So the only thing I could actually reproduce this spectrum, reproduce that high energy part of the spectrum, was a power law, and I tried multiple ways to think, because naturally, you know, we both know that that's more likely.
But in terms of spatial distribution, it's all over inside,
yeah, so the power
right?
law component yeah. is actually found in all this, in the whole area, right? And so, yeah, at the moment, I'm kind of limited by photons because it's such a small observation. But yeah, it seems to become really over everywhere and significantly. It's not like this kind of iffy. Yeah, it's a quite a significant power law component throughout the thing. But hopefully our new observations will be able to really spatially resolve where everything is and be able to put more effort into working out exactly what's happening.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions?
I think there's one in the back.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you try to image this the power law component by producing a hard image, I mean above 2 kV, maybe heavily repeated to see if you can produce an image of this power law component.
Sorry, I missed what you said.
You produce an image of the hard...
Produce it, but I didn't put it in this, and there is significant. So it's like, for example, when we were talking about your poster, that there doesn't seem like there's much, it is quite significant. Right, you can actually nearly outline the supernova remnant shape in this hard X-ray component. Okay. So, yeah.
Well, if there's no further questions, thank you again, Katie.
Thank you so much.